Hey, everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
And a good Tuesday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody's having a good start to your day. Darren McFarland, that's me, holding things down here on the south side of town in Rutherford County. Willie Donick holding the fort down in East Nashville. Chase McCabe.
East side, ready to roll.
Yeah, Chase McCabe out on the west side in Bellevue.
Hey, all you cool cats and kittens.
Oh, boy. We're going to get that in just a minute. Elijah Campbell back at our...
Why am I reaching for the whiskey bottle?
Yeah. Where is mine? Now that you said that, where is mine? Roman, can bring that over here. Fetch. Go fetch. Elijah Campbell back at our Wholesale Link Game Studios, 1824 Murfreesboro Pike, powered by RumbleOn.com. Gents, how we doing?
Doing well.
Doing well. Doing well. Got a little rain this morning, maybe a little rain for part of the day here, but hopefully it'll clear up so we can get outside through the neighborhood a little bit. So we're ready to rock and roll here.
Yeah, today is it's going to be kind of a week, not unlike the end of last week, which was great, and the weekend, but we'll get through it. I just want to start by saying, man, we are so thankful for all the people that are involved in the medical field, whether it's doctors, nurses, anybody that is in the medical profession right now, because we're thinking about you. It's not easy what you're going through, and they're seeing a lot of stuff, guys, and it's tough to watch these stories in these states. And, you know, New York City is overwhelmed. New Orleans is overwhelmed. Chicago is getting overwhelmed, and they don't have the manpower. This is something we were talking about for weeks, and these people in the medical field, in the medical profession, are putting their lives on the line. They are going into the belly of the beast every single day, working 12, 14, 16-hour shifts and coming home, and they can't even stay with their family. A lot of them are sleeping in different rooms, sleeping in the garage. They can't be with their family, and they're telling the stories of people who are losing people. People are dying because of COVID-19, and they're having to say goodbye to their families while these people watch on Skype. They can't even come in the room. They can't come to the hospital. Folks, this is real. This is what we've been talking about and preparing everybody for weeks on end. This is serious stuff, and our hearts go out to the people in the medical profession, because right now they are, you know, there's a long ways to go. We're not even close to this being over. And they, like I said, they're going in the belly of the beast every single day, and they're seeing crap. You know, while we sit here, and I get it, we all have to go through this, and we're allowed to bellyache in our own little bubble, right, our own little fishbowl, because, you know, it affects us too. Everybody's got their own life. And so we're allowed to bellyache a little bit about a rotten day, or, you know, bored out of our minds or what have you, or our baseball season isn't going to happen, or pick whatever's affecting you. You're allowed to do that. But let's also keep in mind the big picture. There's a lot of people out there right here in this market, people that listen to this show, that their lives have been turned upside down because of what they do for a living. And we're thinking about them. And there's no off days for them, especially in a lot of places. And by the way, guys, I didn't do this to start on a depressing note, but, I mean, Tennessee is, you know, we're not anywhere. Our numbers just continue to grow. We're not – it's only going to – you know, it's going to get worse. It's going to these people that I'm talking about, there, everything is going to get amped up even more and more. And so I'm just letting everybody know that we're thinking about them, and hang in there. And hopefully we'll get through this sooner rather than later.
Well, Darren, that's well said. And I know, as you've said many times on the air, you have a lot of close friends that work in the profession, whether they be doctors or nurses or people who work in the medical field on some level, who are seeing this every day, and a lot of us just you can't have the perspective that they have, but you start to see if you're paying attention, and that's what we try to say to everybody every day, is stay informed. You know, watch and pay attention to what some of these people are going through, because it is real, as you said. It's heartbreaking, you know, some of the stories that they see. And here in our listening area, you know, depending on where you're listening from, you know, your area may not have really had a lot of it yet. But I think when it's all said and done, everybody's going to go through their wave, right? We are hopefully prepared pretty well in Nashville. But the numbers are starting to grow, and they're going to keep growing, as you mentioned. So, you probably have seen some of the Predators come forward with some, you know, so just basically public service announcements, just thanking those on the front lines, in particular in the medical field, because they are just valiantly competing every day to do the absolute best that they can. And so, yeah, we send all of our support their way. And we know, as you said, Darren, it's going to get even more challenging here in the coming weeks, for sure. So we've got to all do our part. We have to be thinking of them every day with our actions.
Yep. Yeah, I completely agree with everything you guys have said. And I talked to a buddy of mine last night that's a police officer. You know, just kind of the things that he's had to go through and, you know, dealing with all of this. And the message is stay home. He was like, you know, what have you been up to? And I said, a whole lot of nothing, staying home. And he said, good. That's what we need right now. So
that's the best thing you can do.
Yeah. And so that's, I've, you know, rotted my brain watching Tiger King and, you know, play guitar and watched old sports and video games. And that's just the new norm right now, but that's what we need to do to flatten this curve.
Yeah. And like I said, we're all allowed to complain a little bit, but let's just keep perspective, but we're still allowed to complain a little bit because, you know, our lives, everybody out there listening and us, like we're all, you know, it, nobody said you're supposed to be, you know, you're supposed to be happy. I get it. You try to manage and get through it however you can. And, you know, like yesterday I left after the show and I went out because I knew the weather was going to get a little bit dicier for more days this week than nice. And so, you know, we went out to the field and you know, the sad reality is I don't like to think about this season. The sad reality is, once again, in my little fishbowl, which is a little tiny fishbowl to bigger problems, it's really nothing, but it's just my little world. The sad reality is I know that, you know, the last season of Coach Pitch probably isn't going to happen, and it's done. And the next time we probably step out on a field will be Kid Pitch, and that's a whole new, you know, set of problems, which I've heard from everybody. Once you get to Kid Pitch, you get... But, you know, I hate that we can't do anything. And so I'm trying to stay positive and stay active and, you know, so we don't get depressed. Because it would be easy if you watch enough of it. I try to minimize how much I watch. I want to stay informed, but I can't watch too much. Like I said, it breaks my heart when I hear people in the medical field telling the story of, you know, people saying goodbye to their loved ones via Skype. I mean, that's just awful for me to hear. I mean, just think about that. If that doesn't jolt you and put you in perspective, I mean, people are not allowed to go to hospitals. They can't see their loved one who's dying. And, you know, they have to say goodbye via Skype. I mean, that's just brutal. So do whatever you have to do. Like you said today, go out if you can. When it's dodging rain, take a walk. Just try to do things to keep your spirits up because, you know, it is affecting everybody. But we'll get through it eventually. We got a lot to talk about today for sure. So let's recap. So it sounds like Chase and then Elijah told me right before we went on the air that both of you have completed Tiger King. It's in the books. Seven episodes.
It is in the books. And I can just I will full disclosure. As soon as it was done, I poured a drink. I'm like I need one after this. Like that was because I went on a binge after the show because I was determined to get it finished. And I even had like a couple times people would call me and I'm like, hey, I got to go. I'm finishing Tiger King. Like I'm invested in this. I got to finish this. Holy cow. Like that's all I can say about this is that I start watching this thing over the weekend And I think I'm watching this documentary on Tigers, and it turns out to be this biopic of Joe
Exotic.
That's
what I thought, too. I think that's what I thought, too, when I first
yeah,
was like,
and,
oh,
and I'm like,
is
what
gonna
is
be
the
about,
big fuss
yeah.
about a Tiger documentary? And then, you know, we got Carol Baskin, which she totally killed her husband. I'm just telling you that right now.
Carol is icky. She's oh, icky. She's
oh,
so
okay.
icky.
Well, okay.
Well, she fools
everybody
you at the start,
in this
right?
thing is icky
yeah.
to an extent.
Well, that's true. Everybody's icky. Yeah,
but she starts off. You start off thinking, well, is she supposed to be the good guy, right? Trying to save the Tigers. You think maybe that's the direction it's going, and then you find out she's just as wacky, in her own way as the others.
Yeah, and yep. and so that's the twist on all of it. And you, I don't know how you guys felt. Like I got invested in Joe Exotic because he was so crazy. It was just like I couldn't stop watching. But you know, the more it goes on, you're like, this is not a good guy. There's not a good guy in this movie.
No,
in this documentary. Like there's not. I mean, everybody has a little bit of crazy, and Jeff Lowe is, you know, backstabbing everybody.
So, well, who's the other guy
two.
Is too?
Don't you
the
think
other
we have
guys.
Season two involving some more that happens to. Some of
I
the
don't
people
know if
that
I could
still
handle
out
a season two.
You think there's going to be another one? There's more?
Well, I'm just wondering. Like, you know, Joe wants to take everybody down.
Well, but he's in prison. I mean, I don't know how much more.
The fact like, that he ran for governor, I was just like, of course
yeah,
he did.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. What do you mean? The fact that he ran for governor and got votes.
I know.
He got a significant amount
yes.
of votes.
Yes, not just votes. A
like,
significant
he didn't get,
amount
like,
of votes.
You know, 0.5%, you know, the people just voting as Eddie Murphy would say, vote for the wrong guy as a goof. Remember he used to do that bit?
Yeah.
But he got a 19%?
19%.
One of almost one of every five people that voted for that guy, for the governor.
To run their state.
To run the state. Now think about what we're going through right now, and this is where really you find out who you've elected as your leader, right? This is where a governor, like in all seriousness, all 50 governors are, you know, I'm getting to know the governors of a lot
sure.
of different states that I
yeah.
had no idea because they're out there, they're talking about what they need and they're trying to do the best they can. And,
if not, that not whack this, job was in
could
charge
you imagine
right
if Joe Exotic is the governor trying to figure this out? You got to be kidding.
By the way, speaking
but
of 19%
governors, of the people voted for that guy.
It may be time for Arizona and Florida to kind of get with the times and get with everybody else and figure some of this stuff out.
Yeah,
they might want to start tightening up a little bit. Seems like their leash is a little long on where they are with all this.
Mm-hmm. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, well, we've talked about this a lot, and this is not to you know act like you know. Hey, I could be there making. I realize that every decision that you make has consequences, and a lot of them are tough, and they may not be popular, but. You know, we talked about this concept a lot. There's a fine line, and there's a line you have to decide. You got to get tough. Of, I suggest that you stay at home. You know, we recommend that you stay at home. You know, do the right thing and stay alone. And then the next level of, hey, we're not messing around here. We're not letting you. You've got to stay at home. You know, there's different lines. There's different levels, and that's. I think we're in that time where we've got to make sure that. Everybody gets the message because some people won't get the message unless you make them get the message. You got to make the decision for them.
Yep. We will come back with R.A. Dickey. We unveiled our bracket yesterday in the final hour of the show. We will talk to R.A. on the other side. Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Oh, it makes me happy. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland here on the south side, representing Rutherford County. Willie Donick is over in East Nashville. Chase McCabe in Bellevue, holding down the west side of town. Elijah Campbell back at our Wholesale Inc. Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Yesterday, in the last hour of our show, we unveiled our Nashville sports bracket, the best Nashville athletes of the last 30 years. And we started the voting this morning. So the polls have been open for about an hour and 17 minutes. And joining us is...
We got some close races, too.
We do, and we're going to get to that in a bit. But one of our favorites, and he has certainly made the bracket. Some say a little controversial, 7 seed. Thought he was going to be a little bit higher, but nonetheless, he came in as a 7 seed. R.A. Dickey versus Ryan Tannehill, the 10 seed. R.A., how you doing? Good morning.
I'm doing well. I'm doing well, man. How are you?
We are hanging in there. So how do you feel about the 7 seed? Do you feel slighted?
Hey, look, the seven seed's okay. But I was born and bred here, man.
I came
from NBA, Davidson County, Williamson County, Nashville Sound. Just for the home deal, I feel like I should be a little bit higher, just because I'm from the area, born and bred.
You are Nashville through and through, and see, that's what we needed in the committee room. See, we need those pitches to help with the seating and who gets in, and that we could have used that, even though we knew that. But you know, maybe some other committee members needed to hear that you are Nashville through and through. How you doing,
well,
by the way?
What? I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. I think it's great. This is fun.
Yeah, it is fun. Obviously, we're all in unfamiliar territory. So let me just start with you. How are you and the family doing? How, you know, what are you guys doing with your time? Obviously, we're all staying at home and doing things a little differently. We can't watch sports. We would certainly be talking about the start of the Major League Baseball season. But what's going on in the Dickey household?
Well, I've got a couple of kids who really love to watch baseball on TV. And I'm so sad that TBS and showing throwback games from like Dale Murphy's days, or even the 2017 season, which was my last season, would be nice to click on TBS and check out some old games. But I, you know, we're safe and quarantined up here. We've got like a little 40-acre farm, and we're up here on the hill, and you know, tending to our chickens and just trying to be together. A lot of hard life lessons, but I got a senior in high school, and it's really difficult for her. But we're talking around the dinner table every night. I mean, it has created a really cool dynamic in my family, where we get to come around and really be close and share with each other and talk about life problems around the dinner table, which has been kind of a byproduct of something really bad.
I've never told you this story, but here goes. We've got an 8-year-old son, and we've headed down the travel ball circuit, as it's been well documented on the show. We talked about it. Last year was our first season, and of course this season would have been our last year of coach pitch, which makes me very sad as the pitcher. As we headed all new territory of kid pitch, which everybody says buckle up.
So you're saying your pitching career is about to be over, Darren? Is that what you're saying?
It's pretty much over. It's the sad reality that I've had to face, is that I will no longer be, because we don't have any more.
You were just
nothing else
the
behind him.
Too.
All right, so he's it, and we're not planning on having any more. So that's it. My pitching career is about to end. But I will tell you this: that the night before he was born, we were invited to a VIP Chewy's opening downtown in Midtown in downtown Nashville. So it was the opening before the opening. And we went with a group, and you were sitting two tables over from us with a big group, about your family and everybody. And that was the last meal my wife had before we had our son the next day. The next morning, I think it's center into labor. The Mexican food center into labor.
But you get, got her.
That's right. But, you know, in all seriousness, you've done the coaching. You've got kids of your own. And what is that element? Because you played for so long, and you have so much to teach, and people can learn so much from you. How much joy do you get out of whether it's your kids or being around a group of kids, you as the coach? How much joy has that brought you over the years?
You know, it's been a lot more concentrated since 17 when I retired. I would kind of get to come in and out of my little guy's life, you know, as you guys know more than most, that you play 162 games in 183 days plus spring training. You're going away from home over 200 days a year. So you only get bits and pieces. And since I retired in 2017, I've gotten a real concentrated, you know, time to pour into my kids. I think one of the things I really enjoy is just giving what you got, you know, like that's, I've been real blessed with the opportunities I've been given. And, you know, nobody among us is a self-made man or woman. You know, we've all had people really pour into us in special ways. And I get a chance to do that, and I don't want to sound corny or hokey, but it really is. It really does feel very fulfilling to be able to give what has been given to me in a way that, you know, like these 13-year-old kids who I'm coaching, you know, they've never been taught how to do an inside move the right way to second base, right? Like they, you know, they're just not around the coaching. And that's not a bad thing. It's just a fact, you know. It's like me knowing how to hook up the internet from the road. I don't know how to do that. But been great to do that and to see their eyes get wide open when you show them that, you know, they can just point their toe to second base on the rubber a little bit, which will clear their hips and let them inside turn real easily. And, you know, or to pick off the first, how do you do that? Like, all that stuff is really fun for me. So I'm really enjoyed it.
We're talking to R.A. Dickey, of course, born and raised in Nashville, and he is the 7th seed. And right now you can vote by going to 102.5 The Game on Twitter. His first-round matchup is Ryan Tannehill. I'm a little biased. Ryan hasn't been in town as long as R.A., so I can go back a long way. And so, R.A., let's go back to something. This picks up on the conversation we're having right now, because I think we're all trying to get creative on how to stay active, right, especially if we have sons or daughters that are trying to do it. We're finding ourselves going out, we're throwing a lacrosse ball around or a baseball around. I mean, we can't do things in groups. We can't have team practice. But one of the things that I always remember about your book and our discussions before, when you were trying to perfect your knuckleball, you would just go throw up against the wall, right? You would throw the ball and try to perfect it, draw a strike zone. I mean, that's the kind of creativity we can have right now during this time.
Yeah. No, I mean, that was probably a real, you know, I would credit that to really changing the trajectory of my career. I mean, I had kind of the head knowledge, but I had to figure out how to get that head knowledge of what's a proper mechanic and how do you release the ball and how do you keep your wrist stiff and how do you land right. I had to build that into my muscle memory to be able to execute a good knuckleball 10 out of 10 times. And, you know, it was hard to find people to play catch with, just like now. And so I would go to – there were two different brick walls I had around town where I would go and had access to, and I'd tape out a little strike zone, and I would throw, you know, 200 balls a day off those walls from varying distances. And those times for me, and I mean, that was every other day. And with a knuckleball, I'm not saying, you know, I'm not telling kids to go out and throw 200 pitches against a brick wall at full speed. I'm just saying for me as a knuckleballer, I was able to do that, and it really improved me in a way that you could see directly onto the field. But I, you know, and that's what I'm telling Eli, my son. We have some railroad ties that are part of a wall, and we've taped out a strike zone on that. You know, he'll go out there and he'll do that. He'll throw it against the wall and work on his fielding mechanic, or he'll go in to his windup and work on staying back, or, you know, he'll do the little things that I've tried to teach him over the last few years as he started to pitch, in an effort just to build in the right mechanic. And you got to do those kinds of things now. You know, we use these little wiffle balls. They're like golf balls with the little holes in them. I'll throw those to him and he'll hit them with a broomstick, you know, just to try to train hand eye. And you only need a little bit of space for something like that. So it's just a matter of trying to get creative and still work on the things that make you a good baseball player. And that's what I did, even as a professional.
And our generation, R.A., we grew up, you know, the video games were around to a degree, but I still think there was a lot of sort of self-development. Like for basketball, I know you played a lot of hoops growing up. If you could just find a hoop in a gym or on a schoolyard or maybe in your backyard, if you were fortunate enough to have one somewhere in the neighborhood, just all you need is a ball and a hoop and you work on it. It seems like this generation, maybe this is an opportunity for people, for youngsters to find their own way to do a little self-development on their own rather than just rely on whenever your team is practicing. We play so many games now with the kids. Yeah. There's not as much time to work on the reps. True?
I agree. You know, and you know, I think if you reflect back on your own childhood, I know when I the times I most coveted were the times when I would ride my bike from my house to this little blacktop goal in the middle of the Woodbine area at the boys club. And I would, you know, I'd go there at 2 p.m. and if someone came around, I'd try to get a pickup game going. But for the most part, I was just working on, you know, being Larry Bird, You know, I'd be out there just trying to do my thing. And I think we're in a generation now for sure where things are so much more interactive communally. And there's a lot of good in that. But I think, you know, for me, where I honed most of my skill was just grinding it out on, you know, a basketball goal on West End or a field somewhere where I could throw off a brick wall or whatever. And those are the types of things that, you know, we're forced to do now that we're in quarantine. You know, I'll tell my kids they'll want me to go out and throw with them, and I will. But I'll also say, hey, we got a basketball goal in a cul-de-sac. Go get you 100 shots, and then I'll come out. You know, so I think it's a whole different mentality now in this generation. I'm not saying good or bad. I'm just saying it's different.
Chase, go ahead.
We're talking to R.A. Dickey, former Cy Young winner. And R.A., on this show, we have an interesting dynamic because Willie's a big Mets fan. I'm a big Braves fan. So that gets interesting during the summer as, you know, we compete there. But you played in 2017 with the Braves, and that's when this whole thing was kind of – you were starting to see the young pitchers start to come up and hit the major leagues for the first time. So you were around – a lot of these guys that are making up the Braves now. What is it that you saw from them at that time when you went through spring training in that season? It kind of made you think this could be something for a team that could be competing for not only the NL East, but World Series titles as well.
Yeah, no, that's right. I was exposed early on to, you know, Foltynewicz and Soraka and Fried and, you know, there were a lot of others that have big arms down there. But I think the guys that you're seeing contribute now are guys who were kind of polished well beyond their years. Even when I was there, you could see that they were much more refined, less raw, and you knew they were going to contribute. I didn't think as quickly as they did with the success that they did. Maybe no one could foresee how that was going to transpire. But I tell you, there were four or five of those kids that you knew, I knew that I was kind of holding the reins until these guys developed just a little bit more. And sure enough, that very next year, you know, they went to the playoffs, and then last year they had a really, really good year. And it's most of it is about pitching, as you well know. And to have that youth that's so good so early makes a Braves fan real excited. I know I grew up a Braves fan, and so I'm excited for them. And they're good character guys, too. Like, I got to know Max Fried especially pretty well when I was there. And, you know, you've got a good group of guys character-wise, too.
Why do you think it's worked with Brian Snitker as the manager? Because he gets the job, you know, when Freddy Gonzalez is let go and had been with the organization for so long that he gets this opportunity, but he's hung on to it and, you know, continues to lead them onward and upward. Why do you think that's worked?
Well, Brian Snitker was one of my favorite managers I ever played for, you know, and I played for a lot of good ones, but he's up there in my top two, really. And one of the reasons that he's there is because he hasn't forgotten in all the years that he's been away from his time as a player how hard the game is. And so he's a good communicator, one. He's got a great temperament and demeanor. You know, he is a good in-game manager. Everybody really has to be to have success in the National League in particular. But he just possesses great leadership qualities from a player's perspective because he lets you be you. You know, he doesn't try to force you into, you know, a system he identifies your gifts. He communicates well about his expectation and then gives you the freedom to make mistakes up to a certain extent and then, you know, react from those mistakes in hopefully a positive way. He was a great manager for me.
Go ahead.
All right, last thing. We had a lot of fun last week with all of our guests because we tweeted out pictures as we were all doing this from home. This is the first time, and Willie and I have been at this for a long time. We've never done shows from our house, so we're –
yeah.
As I said at the beginning, we're all in unfamiliar territory, but we've got some cool memorabilia, sports memorabilia. Everybody's got a piece of memorabilia that is special to them. So we tweeted out pictures that we've got of, and then we let the listeners, and so we got a great response. And then everybody that we talked to, you know, what do you have? And we got some great stories. I have a feeling you can probably one-up everybody in all the stories that we've had, maybe if you want to throw in a Cy Young. But what is a memorabilia that's near and dear to you at your house or your office or wherever you keep that stuff?
Oh, man. Well, you know, it's hard to tell. It's hard to tell you a favorite. I have a few. Can I share a few?
Like, sure.
I love the Cy Young Award. That's great. It's fun to show people that. But, like, I'm much more about, you know, nostalgic memory. And I grew up a Larry Bird fan. And so one of my years in Texas, our clubhouse manager knew how to get to Larry Bird. He found out Larry Bird was a hero of mine. And I come to the clubhouse one day, and in my locker is an autographed Larry Bird game jersey. It says, "Best wishes, R.A., Larry Bird." And so that's one of my favorite.
Wow.
I grew up a Sandy Koufax fan. I have a Sandy Koufax rookie card that I love. And I got to play in the Olympics in Atlanta, and so a bronze medal, that's a fun one. Mm. I have a few that I really love, but most of them don't have to do with me. They're about my memories as a kid, like growing up with the games that I played and the people that I followed. And like, I loved Andre Dawson, and I have a personalized Andre Dawson ball because I watched WGN and saw the Hawk so many times on WGN. And those are the things that are most valuable to me, I think. And so those are a few.
That is really cool. By the way, is that Larry Bird jersey in a case with a light on it, right when you come in the front entrance of your house?
Exactly.
I mean, that is.
It's actually, I've tried to force feed my son Larry Bird YouTube videos. It's in his room. he's grown up a Stephon Curry fan or
sure.
a James Harden fan, right? So that's their Larry Bird, and but it's in his room on display, so he gets to wake up every morning and see double threes staring him out in the face.
That is outstanding. Hey, thanks for doing this. It's always good to catch up with you. Tell your fans out there, you've got a lot of them, to go vote for you on our Twitter page so you can advance to the next round. And you and your family be safe, okay? We'll talk to you down the road.
I appreciate you guys. You'll hang in there.
All right, that is R.A. Dickey. Always good to catch up with him. We will tell you how you can vote. The voting is open for our Nashville sports bracket. We'll also check in on some results. We'll do that on the other side. Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Tuesday, this little rainy Tuesday. Good stuff from R.A. Dickey. Always good to catch up with him. And our Nashville sports bracket is out. People have been voting now over an hour and a half. And Chase, I'm going to get you to jump in there with some results and tell everybody, too, like how long they've got to, how long are we doing the voting for the first round?
You can go to our Twitter account at 102.5 The Game. Voting will end at 9 p.m. tonight. So you're going to have 12 hours every day to vote in a specific region. So the Jeff Fisher region is the one that is open. And so
we're doing one region at a time.
Yes, one region per day. So and that's how we're going to get through this first round, and then, you know, round of 32 and all of that. So it's going to work just like the NCAA tournament. So the Jeff Fisher region is open. The number one overall seed, Stephen Air McNair, 95% of the vote right now against Ian Clark. So not looking like a 16-1 upset so far, as Steve McNair running away with it. It gets a little tighter. Now, when we started the show, Thomas Vokoun and Taylor Lewan were neck and neck. But the boy, as he is called, he has addressed this on Twitter. And so has Will Compton. So they have gotten involved, and supporters of the boy have helped. So Taylor Lewan leading Thomas Vokoun 62% to 38%. That one,
This is a key. Getting the people aware and getting your voter block.
Oh yeah,
I think that's going to be a key factor here going out. So we might have to get some Predator people to pay attention to Mr. Vokoun and see if we can even the score a little bit there.
Well, when Taylor Lewan saw our bracket tweeted out, and where in the or the Jeff Fisher region tweeted out, he tweeted, "I have no idea what this is, but I'm very happy with the 9 seed. No one expects much out of me, and they sleep on the boy. Then one thing leads to another, and the boy might find himself competing for a championship. Hashtag no bad days." Taylor Lewan.
Look,
that's awesome.
There's a chance here in the next couple of days that he might join us, but I'll say this for the boy. I don't like your next matchup. That's going to be tough for you if things hold as they are. Got the four.
Well, Thomas Vokoun is coming on though. Thomas Vokoun is coming on with us.
I know, so
at
that
1 o'clock. So
that could change things.
All right, so I'm just saying we need to have a little, fair competition here. I mean, Thomas doesn't live here, but I think there's some Predator fans that can go back and appreciate him. This is an 8-9, so this should be very, very tight.
Well, and what's
so
funny
I
is,
think,
Keith Bullock's going to join us at noon. Keith Bullock's going to join us at noon, and when I was getting him on and telling him about this, he's like, wait a minute, send me the link, what do I need to know? And he goes, this is awesome. So I think this is going to be a lot of fun. PK Subban, the 4 seed, taking on 13 seed VY Vince Young. Subban leading that one 70% to 30%. The Freak Javon Curse, a 5 seed, against the 12 seed Jay Cutler. 83% for Javon Curse now.
I told you guys, whoever said Jay Cutler, I was like, no, that's not The Freak is alive and well. I didn't know it was going to – I mean, I don't think it'll stay lopsided like that, but Javon Curse is that'll set up a very interesting matchup in round two with Subban and Curse if it plays out that way.
This is an interesting matchup, and I thought it was intriguing when we announced it. 6-seeded Shane Foster and 11-seed Derek Barnett. Barnett leading the way for the upset, but 55% to 45%. So pretty close right now for Derek Barnett. K-Bull, as we said, Keith Bullock, who's going to join us at noon, 95% to 5% over the 14-seed Ingle Martin. And who we just talked to, R.A. Dickey, the 7-seed, trailing Ryan Tannehill right now, 55% to 45%. The 2-seed, Roman Yossi, running away with it, 97%. Chantel Anderson, only 3%, the 15th seed.
All right.
Since we just talked to R.A., just for people that may be newer to town, right, and just you obviously look, you know who Ryan Tannehill is, right? Everybody knows who Ryan Tannehill is. If you're a little younger or maybe don't go back, R.A. Dickey, Cy Young Award winner. Not that I'm lobbying for anybody here, but I am.
No. Right? And a Cy Young for the Mets. I mean, no, of course you're not lobbying for him.
Cy Young, 2012. Retired a Brave, right? But and he was talking about his memorabilia, Darren. Olympian, right? He pitched for the USA in the 1996 Olympics. So All-American at University of Tennessee, prolific college. I keep using the word prolific. Just tremendous college pitcher. And of course, born and raised here, Montgomery Bell Academy. And
well, he got drafted.
His last 8 years.
Chose to go to college at UT. I mean, he got drafted. What round? It was pretty high. I think it was top. It was in the top 10, right? Rounds.
Oh, he definitely could have gone. I mean, what you do, as we know, is you tell people that your inclination is to go to college, and sometimes that drops where you would have been picked.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't go by that. But he was a first-round pick out of UT,
yeah,
to go to the Rangers. And then the story is well told from there. They discovered he didn't have the ligament in his elbow, so that dropped his signing bonus. He eventually turns into a knuckleball pitcher. In his last 8 years in the league, he never pitched less than 169 innings in one particular season. He had 5 straight years of at least 208 innings, which is a rare, rare thing these days. So just the body of work over a long period of time, even though maybe he doesn't quite have the name recognition if you're not a baseball fan that you would for Ryan Tannehill, to me, I think this vote ought to be a lot closer than it is. To me, R.A. should win. He's, of course, he's a 7 seed.
Yeah, I agree with that. I look, I'm not necessarily against Tannehill being in this, but it's still, it's, come on. You got to look at the bigger picture.
Yeah, I mean, he's got 1 year. It was a pretty big year. But, I mean, it's a portion of one season. We're talking about a 30-year window here.
Well, he made his case. Look, it says Nashville Sports Bracket, the best Nashville athletes, and RA says, man, I'm Nashville through and through. And he
was. That's right. That's right.
He's Nashville through and through. All right, we will come back.
Now, we'll see. We'll see if RA toots his own horn somewhere here, maybe retweets and asks for. I mean, I don't know. Like, that is a strategy that some of these guys can do, but some of them are way too humble to ask for people's votes. So they need, like, a campaign manager.
Well, Taylor Lewan has that with the Bussin' with the Boys. So
that's right.
Yes, he does.
There is stuff out there swirling that the Dolphins may try to trade for the number one pick overall. We'll discuss that. Also, Emory Hunt, we'll talk about the draft and all of that with him to kick off the second hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase. So we'll come back and wrap up the first hour, but first I want to talk to you about USS, United Structural Systems, a foundation repair and waterproofing company that has served our area here in Middle Tennessee since 1994. And they've got a lot of satisfied homeowners. How about more than 18,000 satisfied residential customers? And maybe you've been out in the yard peddling around now that we have all this time. A lot of people are taking on projects at the house. Maybe you've noticed you've got some bricks that are cracking, or you've noticed some walls that are bowing, or with the weather being nice, you've been opening and closing windows or doors. You've noticed that they've been sticking, drywall separating, maybe a chimney that's tilting or leaning. Look, there are all kinds of signs that maybe your house is trying to tell you something. And usually when it comes to projects like this, you do not want to tackle a project like this. You need to get the experts out. And that's USS. They'll come out and give you a free estimate. They believe in their reputation. They believe in their quality of work and the integrity of their work. And that's what they're going to provide for you. And that's why they have so many satisfied customers. They're licensed and insured. And as a homeowner, all of this should have your attention. If you need to get them out to your house, call 615-227-2275. That's 227-2275. Or you can always go to their website, usstn.com. And as they say, we guarantee our best. Call USS. At 102.5 The Game, got till 9 o'clock tonight, our Jeff Fisher region. We will get through that first round. There is news out there that the Dolphins may be trying to trade for that number one overall pick in the 2020 draft. That the Dolphins evidently are eyeing Joe Burrow. So the Dolphins have three draft picks. The Dolphins, believe it or not, while we laughed at them this time last year, they were tanking for Tua, their offseason, they got rid of everybody. I mean, look at the quarterbacks they trotted out there as their starters. They trade for Josh Rosen. They end up trading away during the season Drake to Arizona, Kenyon Drake, the running back. Then they trade Tunzel to the Texans. I mean, it was like, what are they doing? Well, they end up winning, what, four or five games, and all of a sudden Brian Flores, who I said early on, like, he's a really good hire. Like, he's going to be a good coach for the Dolphins. In fact, there's a couple Dolphins fans that come to Barrel House at Preds games, and I'm like, you're going to like Brian Flores. He's a good coach. And all of a sudden,
I loved that.
They're building this thing up, and you could see they're going in the right direction. And now they've got all, I think they have five draft picks in the first two rounds. So all of a sudden you hit on a franchise quarterback. Everybody says this draft is loaded with wide receivers. You hit on a stud wide receiver. And the next thing you know, Tom Brady's out of New England, and that division could be wide open.
Yeah, and so I think that changes their strategy, right? I mean, if you just now at this point get the right guy in your center, and that changes the whole ball game for them. I like some of the moves they've made in free agency. Like I said, I like the hire of Brian Flores. I think he's got the right mentality for that job, and there's a buy-in. You know, it's – I'll use this comparison. It's like we've talked about on this show with Vanderbilt and Jerry Stackhouse. The team may not have all the talent in the world, but the buy-in is there, and so that can get you places, and I feel like that's the case with Miami.
The question is, how hard would you try if you're Miami? You got a lot of draft currency here, right? How important is it to move up to make sure you get to it, if that's the guy that you want, which is what a lot of people seem to be hinting at right now? How hard do you have to work? I mean, you don't want to take the chance that somebody jumps up there and grabs him, right, if that's the guy you have your eye on. So what do you think it'll take?
I think Miami's in a weird spot because you're right. When you have three first-round picks and they clearly need a franchise quarterback, and I think most everybody has said it's a two-quarterback draft and then it's everybody else. And so, you know, you're basically taking chances with the other guy. Now, does that mean Justin Herbert or Jordan Love and those guys won't go high? No. It just sounds like it's Tua and Burrow, and then there's a pretty significant drop-off to the next guys. In other words, your chances of them being more of a bust or not as good go way up. And so you need to make sure that with that fifth pick, or do you need to make sure you get that franchise quarterback because you have draft capital, just move up and guarantee it, because you never know. You know, that's four picks before you. And you never, and it seems clearly that one of them's taking a quarterback in Cincinnati. So that leaves three more picks for somebody to take that quarterback. And that's just a risk probably Miami's not willing to take.
So do we believe that the Bengals are going to take Burrow no matter what? Are they set on him, or do you think they secretly have any interest in Tua? That's the other thing. If the Bengals even feign interest, they have the first pick, right? Even if they ultimately are fine with Burrow, wouldn't it make sense for them to be calling the Dolphins going, hey, we love Tua, man. We love him. What are you going to do for us? We'll give you the first pick. We'll swap picks with you. But what are you going to do for us? I mean, that's the advantage you have. You got to work that, right? That's what John Robinson did when he had the first pick.
Right, but I think if you're the Bengals, you have to look at the big picture and the greater need. I mean, yeah, they need a quarterback, and so they would – if they took Burrow number one overall, I think that's a home run. But if they see an opportunity to get more assets and still end up with a pretty darn good quarterback in Tua, then I think that's what they do. So it's not necessarily.
Yeah, but who's better? Don't you think some people would argue that Tua has the bigger upside? If you feel okay about the recovery from the injury, I know Trent Dilfer thinks the world of Tua, just for an example of a guy that evaluates quarterbacks. I mean, So Darren, I know you talked to some people about this. If you believe that the injury is going to be okay, right, long term, that he won't have any long term effects from this, don't you think it's split at best, and you might have more people saying that the ceiling is higher for Tua?
Yes, but it's still split. I mean, I think if you ask enough people, you know, that's what's always interesting about the one and the two, right? It's kind of like we went through this with Jameis Winston and Mariota. We saw it play out, which people don't remember this, but it did play out this way. And I know it sounds silly, but Peyton Manning and Ryan Leaf, it was not a foregone conclusion who should go number one. Everybody thinks, you know, come on, give me a break. Yeah, after we've seen it all play out, that was easy no-brainer. But there were plenty of people at the time making a case of why you should take Ryan Leaf number one if you're Indianapolis. And so it's always, you know, I don't think this one is any different. I think if you talk to enough people, there's probably, and I don't know what the percentage is. I don't know if it would go down to 50-50. To answer your question, probably I would say in the end it would be more people would say Tua than Burrow, but I don't know. It'd be pretty close. It'd be close enough for, you know, to spark quite the debate if you got, you know, the right people involved.
Yeah, and I think...
Right. So Chase, back to you. Don't you think you still... I don't know if the Bengals deep down feel like, you know, they actually would take Tua. But when you have the first pick, it's not just the Dolphins. There may be some other teams, too, that could definitely up the value for that first pick. So you could, if you play your cards right, you could end up with extra assets and still end up with Burrow, right? Because you get somebody that wants to go all in, and they are going to do whatever they can to get that first pick, so they dictate things. So I just think the Bengals are the ones that are really, at the end of the day, holding the cards. But you hear a lot of noise from Miami saying this is the guy that they want. They want Tua, so because they got the three first-round picks. To me, you get in on that action if you're the Bengals, and if you're one of those teams in two, three, or four.
Yeah, no, and I think if you're Zach Taylor and the Bengals, Zach Taylor being their head coach, you have to look at both quarterbacks and really ask yourself which one of these guys fits what we're trying to do offensively. And I think Joe Burrow, we all know he had a tremendous season, but if you do the comparison between his first season at LSU and last season, there's quite a bit of difference. And a lot of that was because of the offense and what they ended up doing there with the OC. So that factors in. We talk about systems all the time, and so I think that that's something that they have to look at.
We'll come back. Emory Hunt will kick things off. We'll talk about the draft with Emory Hunt to kick off the second hour. Darren, Donnie, and Chase, that's next.
Hey, everybody. Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.